Neil Woodford was the UK's most celebrated fund manager. For example, if you invested £1,000 with him back in 88, 25 years later, you'd have 25 grand, which is extraordinary. At the peak of his career, he was managing £33 billion for hundreds of thousands of investors. What happened next? Well, we'll find out now from David Ricketts, who's written a book called When the Fund Stops. Great title, David. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill. Good to speak to you. Thanks very much.
And you. Wow, this is a great story. It's a film in the making right here. So let's talk about the man who the BBC called the man who can't stop making money. What's his background?
Yeah, that's right. As you say, it's a great story. And actually, as a financial journalist, it was a fantastic story to cover last year. I was back in actually 2019 when Neil Woodford, his business imploded, which was inconceivable when he set up on his own back in 2014. So as you say, I mean, he was one of the UK's most celebrated fund managers. He had a great reputation when he was at a firm called Invesco. And as you say, you mentioned the figures there about, you know, investing £1,000 and making £25,000 over 25 years, which is, yeah, by any stretch of imagination, that's huge, huge accomplishment. Now, he was one of these guys in the city who, at the time, back in the sort of late 90s, when everyone was piling into tech stocks, you know, Neil Woodford was, I suppose, a contrarian, if you like. He didn't want to follow the herd. He stuck with a lot of the big companies that had made him a lot of money over the years previously. A lot of these companies were big tobacco companies, a lot of the sort of FTSE 100 companies that were away from the tech sector. And as the dot-com bubble burst in 2000, he was vindicated. So basically, he stood by his bets, and yeah, he was proved right. So all those managers that piled into tech stocks got burned and lost a lot of money. And Neil Woodford, he made a killing as a result of that. And he did the same again going into the financial crisis. He was one of the very few fund managers that actually invested in banks. And obviously, we know what happened when the financial crisis hit. And, some of the big bank names suffered and had to be bailed out. So he was someone who certainly appeared to have the Midas touch. I mean, everything he kind of invested in took off, and he made a fortune for his investors. Now, he left Invesco back in 2014. He decided, actually, he wanted to strike out on his own. I think, you know, from speaking to people that worked with him at the time, I think he probably felt a little bit constrained by some of the procedures that were, you know, come with being part of a big organization, if you like. He was certainly a force to be reckoned with in the city. And if you're the CEO of a big company that he invested in, you wanted to make sure you kept Neil Woodford, one of your biggest investors, happy. So, there were stories about him. You know, if he wanted to meet with a chief executive, you know, he would often summon the boss to the office in Henley rather than, you know, making the trip to their headquarters in London, which is...
For people who work with him, though, you know, at the time, they must have thought that he was either gifted with the Midas touch or he was incredibly dodgy and pulling some fast one.
No, I think from speaking to people that were with him, yeah, he certainly was seen as being untouchable, if you like. I mean, it's quite unusual for an investment company, a fund management company, to be based outside of London, because obviously London, they've been the financial centre of the UK. With Invesco, you know, its history sort of goes back to the 70s, and it was set up by a guy called Martin Arbib, who was actually quite a famous sort of racehorse owner. But he started dabbling in investment, set up Perpetual, as it was called back then, in Henley. I think that's what appealed to Neil Woodford. He started his career in the city, but actually quite liked the fact that you could be removed from all of that, you know, be removed from the kind of the analysts and the other kind of fund managers, and be out in the sticks, if you like. And when Perpetual was acquired by Invesco in the late 90s, early 2000s, I think it was actually Neil Woodford played a big part in keeping Invesco Perpetual in Henley. He wanted to remain removed from the city. So, yeah, he was someone who, when you speak to people who work with him, you pulled a lot of strings, if you like, within the wider organisation. And there was, you know, other stories about him being being somebody who championed, you know, the kind of in-house gym at Perpetual as well. He's a fitness fanatic. He likes to keep fit. So, you know, he was someone who bosses realised was making the company a lot of money, and, you know, they wanted to keep him sweet as well. So,
Was he a glamorous character? I mean, was he going around in Lamborghinis and going off on posh holidays and, you know, all the trappings?
Well, I think... Yeah, I think with an element of success comes, you know, there was an ego to him as well. And people who worked with him, yeah, I mean, he certainly enjoyed the finer things in life. I think, you know, after he made this, the right call, if you like, when it led to the tech stocks in 2000 and, you know, sticking by those big companies that he invested in, he made a lot of money. Yep. He became sort of an overnight millionaire, if you like. And, yeah, that led to him, yeah, buying a grade to, I think, listed property with his wife, and he raced Ferraris as a hobby. And people you speak to who work with him said, you know, the car park resembled a bit of a sort of flash car showroom, if you like.
There were
always sort of flash cars coming in and out. But yeah, I mean, I think it was just inevitable. If you make that much money and become an overnight success, then you do sort of spend your money on some of the finer trappings. But he certainly was someone who enjoyed sort of spending his money on fast cars and other things. And all of that's in the book. You can kind of get a sense about his taste for racing Ferraris. And I think even when he met his second wife, started to take up horse riding as well. So he developed this interest in keeping horses as well. Obviously, when you keep horses, you need a lot of space to house them. So that kind of leads to big properties with stables and everything else.
Yeah. So what one would think that moving to set up your own company would be the best thing that he could possibly do. So what happened?
So during his sort of latter years at Invesco, where he made a big name for himself, he started to stray away from those big companies I talked about that kind of served him so well in the past.
Right.
And he started to invest in smaller startup companies. Sometimes these are companies that aren't even listed on the stock market. So by their very nature, they become harder to trade, if you like. So if you're investing in FTSE 100 companies, you know, there's a lot of what we call liquidity there. So you can buy and sell shares quite easily. But the smaller the companies are, it becomes harder to buy and sell those shares. So he started to venture into some of these companies during his later part of his career at Invesco. But when he set up on his own, the new fund that he launched, you know, it did have a longer list of the smaller, less liquid companies as part of the portfolio. So that wasn't a problem. I mean, you are able to do that. There's nothing wrong with doing that whatsoever. But the problems started to arise when a lot of the performance issues hit the bigger companies in that fund. So around sort of 2017, you know, Neil Woodford had pulled in about £10 billion of investor money into his large fund. So a huge amount of money to be managing in one single product. Unfortunately for him, a lot of the big companies, so the companies like Purple Bricks, AA Group, Provident Financial, these are all big listed names, all issued profit warnings. So it was a bit of an unfortunate period for Neil Woodford. It came at a very sort of fast rate. All these investment bets seemed to fail at the same time, which obviously affected performance. And investors in that fund started to get a bit spooked and started to pull their money out of that fund. Now, the challenge for Neil Woodford at the time was, in order to pay those investors back, he had to sell down some of the holdings in those larger companies, which then meant the smaller companies, so those less liquid ones that I mentioned, became a bigger component of that fund. So
of course,
all of a sudden, your fund is now kind of becoming constrained in what it can do. It's difficult to sell those less liquid companies, and the fund was in a bit of a crisis moment. So the decision was taken at that point to suspend the fund. So essentially what that meant was that the fund was frozen, and investors couldn't get their money out of the fund because that period was kind of needed, if you like, for Woodford to reset the fund, or, you know, to sell down some of those holdings, reposition the fund into more liquid companies, so that when it did reopen, he would be able to pay those investors back. And for those people that know the story of Woodford, unfortunately, it never happened because the fund was wound up. and his investment empire collapsed a few months later. So
goodness.
People that were locked into that fund are now still waiting for money to be paid back to them. So, yeah, as we said at the outset, this was a fantastic sort of financial story back in 2019 when it all unfolded. But obviously, you know, it comes at a great personal cost to those investors who were who followed Neil Woodford and thought he was the, you know, the star fund manager he'd been built up they'd been led to believe he was, and he kind of failed in the most spectacular manner.
Wow. And so one would think that he'd disappear off with his tail between his legs and never darken the doors again, but I don't think that's the case, is it? Isn't he still active?
He's not active. I mean, we haven't heard from Neil Woodford since he made his sort of last public statement back in 2019, October 2019.
Right.
It was a real sort of fall from the top. I mean, he went from hero to zero in no time at all. I mean, he actually believed that he could reposition that fund and reopen it at the end of the year. And, you know, let's remember, not everyone in that fund wanted to pull their money out. I mean, there were a lot of people that still thought that Neil Woodford could turn things around. But he just wasn't given the chance to do so. And I think there are a lot of questions that are being asked of various actors and players in this story as well. So, you know, whether it's the financial regulator, so the Financial Conduct Authority here in the UK, whether they should have, you know, spotted some of the red flags sooner, should they have acted sooner, you know, to prevent the fund from being wound up. There's also a company called Link, which acts as the what we call the authorised corporate director. That sounds quite complicated, but essentially what they were was the kind of the layer of oversight over the fund.
Right.
And there are questions being asked about, you know, whether they should have acted sooner, or whether they should have actually have wound up the fund in October 2019, because it was actually their decision to suspend the fund and also their decision to wound up the fund. And again, they took those decisions believing it was in the best interests of investors. And I suppose it's quite hard for investors to stomach that, you know, when you know, they were locked in that fund. And you know, some of the personal stories are quite shocking as well. A lot of this, the money that was locked in that fund was being, you know, put aside for house extensions or holidays, weddings, you know, retirement plans, and all that's kind of been shot to pieces.
But, well, I guess if you're a gambler, it's great when your horses are winning, but not so great when they're losing.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that's the thing with investment. Investment is a very long-term game, and I think there are a lot of maybe investors who were thinking, well, I'll put my money in this fund for, you know, 3 or 4 months or a year or whatever, and I can get it back quite easily, on the expectation that the money would go up. And obviously, you know, everyone in investment should know that you know, money is at risk. It doesn't always mean that because someone has a track record over 25 years that they're going to continue that track record over the next 5 or 10. So you do have to be very wary. But just going back to your previous point, though, we haven't seen Neil Woodford reemerge anywhere yet.
And, did he not try and buy back some of the stocks?
Yeah, there is a, and again, going back to Link as well, there is a question around whether some of the assets that remained in that fund were sold off too cheaply. And a lot of the assets were sold to a US-based company for, I think it was around about $200 million last year. And yeah, some of those companies that were packaged together and sold off were then sold off again by that US investor, and they made quite a nice profit on the back of that. So again, it's quite galling for investors to see all this unfold. And I think, yeah, Neil Woodford was kind of looking at some of these assets that remained in the fund to see whether he could buy them back and do something with them. But yeah, it remains to be seen what happens with Woodford. I think his reputation has certainly been shot to pieces after all this. And I do wonder if he were to come back, you know, would he get the traction? Would he get the support from sort of the retail investor, the kind of person on the street who put money with him over all those years? Would they be so willing to do so again?
Yeah.
You know, he may come back in some form, you know, managing money for large institutions or, you know, private offices or high net worth individuals. But I think kind of the retail investor who was burnt quite badly by following him and his new fund probably won't be so willing to go with him next time.
Interesting stuff. So all in the book, When the Fund Stops by David Ricketts. David, before you go, I must just ask you, as a financial journalist, about the huge story of last week, which is the little man sticks it to the big man story, which is the GameStop scandal, which is extraordinary.
Yeah, it's really an extraordinary story, and I think actually it's not over yet because you know, last week the stock surged, you know, over 200%, 300%. I think it's up by more than 1,700% over the last month or so. So it's been a huge interest for us financial journalists. Actually, it's been quite a nice change because actually the last 3 or 4 months everyone's been talking about Bitcoin, and that's been a big sort of frenzy, seeing the kind of price of Bitcoin, you know, peak and then trough again. It's been such a volatile kind of period for that asset class. But you're absolutely right. GameStop, I mean, even now there's talk of a film being put out on this. And I think it remains to be seen what happens with other stocks that, you know, have been heavily shorted. So the idea was that these retail investors, these kind of very small investors using social media to help pump up the share price of this unloved company, you know, could we see that sort of trickle through to other stocks? And I think, you know, there's AMC, there's Nokia, BlackBerry have been talked about as other stocks that could potentially be a target for these investors. But yeah, hedge funds and other short sellers will be looking and sort of following what goes on these social media forums with more interest now.
But have they not tried to, you know, stick their fingers in the dike so that this could never happen again? And if they have, is that fair?
I think hedge funds and other large investors, I mean, they follow all sorts of signals online. I think it's, you know, they probably would have been keeping a close eye on Reddit and some of these other social media forums for quite a long time. But I think one of the big warnings over all of this, of course, and I think, you know, people will be following this story thinking, well, you know, maybe I should buy up some GameStop or AMC stock or whatever, the next stock that could kind of see this huge rise. But yesterday, you know, GameStop, I think the share price fell by about 60%. So, you know, I think people need to be very cautious about piling into these stocks where they see, you know, a lot of social media or media interest in, and, you know, just because a stock goes up by, you know, 50% one day doesn't mean it's going to go up by 50 or 60% the next. And you have to be careful not to buy at the top because obviously you're going to experience the downfall. But I think, there'll be a lot of interest now among hedge funds and other short sellers in where social media takes this story. Because actually, when you look at the share price now, I mean, if GameStop continues to fall, then obviously hedge funds might start shorting again. And actually, you know, will they recover some of those losses? I don't know. But they certainly will be looking to try and make some money on the downside as well.
Well, but I guess there's a lot of people, probably me included, I think, actually, who gave a little cheer, though, for the little man when that all unfolded.
I mean, it's interesting to see what it means for financial markets more broadly, because obviously regulators will be looking at this now with great interest and thinking, well, you know, this has wider market implications as well. We've seen, you know, the price of silver as well. That's something else that's been targeted this week by some of the online forums. So again, this, you know, silver has, you know, it's not just a stock specific story. It then moves into other commodities, and silver obviously has a lot of, you know, the price of silver, you know, jewelry and medical equipment and various other implications that the price of silver has. So this is a wider market story, but it's interesting to see where it goes from here. And I think regulators are a little bit worried about this. So I think there could be a few sort of stern words or investigations taking place over the next few months.
Fantastic. Thanks for discussing that with us. The book When the Fund Stops is available from our website, tre.radio. You can get it there to save you searching the internet for it. David Ricketts, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Thanks,
sir.
Paul.
Take care. All the best.
Nice talking to you.